Million tree campaigns are springing up all over the country. They're filling up corners and vacant lots with greenery everywhere. Of course, trees are great for soaking up carbon and just for taking in some shade, but trees can also emit compounds that mix with the pollutants in the air, and this can sometimes increase air pollution. How can we plant smarter? Todd Rosensteel is a professor of biology at Portland State University. Welcome to Science Friday.
Thank you for having me.
I'm sure that a lot of people don't know that trees can be polluters themselves.
That's probably true. But I think most people, you know, you walk outside and you smell the smell of a pine forest, or you pick up a flower and take a scent, or you smell your neighbor mowing his or her lawn, and you kind of understand what I'm talking about, which is, you know, these plants emit large numbers of really diverse compounds up into the atmosphere.
And so which ones are the bad compounds? What are they emitting?
Yeah, it's a good question. So most of the plant volatiles that we know the most about really fall into a category called, what are these, terpenes or terpenoids. So you think of the smell of pine trees. And so these are molecules, probably the one that's the most significant globally is a really small 5-carbon molecule called isoprene. And isoprene, although it's hard to smell with your nose, people might know it as kind of the precursor of rubber. And it's kind of what you can put together to make latex and tires and this sort of stuff.
So there's got to be a reason that the trees are emitting these things, right?
Absolutely. And so, I mean, you know, what's interesting, though, is we know a lot about the different types of compounds, and there's different hypotheses. We definitely know some of the molecules that plants make, you know, in the case of flowers, for example, might be a plant-insect interaction, right? So there's a pollination calling out to predators or calling out to pollinators, and it could be a stress tolerator. A lot of these small molecules, there's hypotheses that they actually function as antioxidants, so they're actually helping to protect the leaves under high stress.
So the trees, the tree emission is going to react with other chemicals, other volatiles, to make pollution worse. Can you describe the process how that happens?
Sure. And, you know, so one of the things that happens is as plants, you know, urban trees or even trees out in a natural forest, when they emit these compounds to the atmosphere, I mean, the atmosphere, we often don't think about the chemistry that's going on in the atmosphere, but, you know, it's kind of a big chemical reactor. And so everything we dump up into the atmosphere, particularly in urban landscapes where you have VOCs, and whether those are VOCs from trees or VOCs from automobiles, they kind of react with oftentimes nitrogen oxides. So these are molecules that come out of car exhaust or oxidation, and actually, you know, through this kind of chemical spaghetti soup, could actually directly lead to the production of ozone.
So are there trees that actually suck in the pollution instead of giving off the pollution?
Yeah, I don't want to leave the impression that, you know, trees are a negative thing for air quality. It's a complicated thing. And so, much like when we think about paint, for example, you might choose paint that's a high VOC paint or a low VOC paint. You know, there's diversity in plants. So we have some plants which are really large emitters of VOCs, and we maybe want to think about where we plant those. And we have plants which emit virtually none. So for example, a classic example might be an oak and a maple. You would look at those two trees and think, wow, they kind of look the same. You know, they have the same shade characteristics.
Both hardwoods, right?
Both hardwoods, great urban trees. But, you know, an oak is a classically high emitter of volatile compounds, particularly the molecule isoprene, and can really, if it's on a large scale, impact regional air quality, whereas maples are relatively clean.
Right? No
so
kidding.
We have there's a lot of diversity out there in terms of the compounds emitting. And what's interesting is oftentimes we, you know, as cities are marching towards, you know, million tree campaigns, and, you know, around the globe, there's this drive to putting in a massive tree planting campaigns in urban landscapes, is that we might want to think a little bit strategically about, you know, which species and why and where are we planting them with respect to air quality.
So you would say don't plant the oak, plant the maple instead.
Well, yes and no. And this
too,
is where the
too
science.
Simple, huh?
That's too simplistic. And that's where the science gets really exciting. That's the sort of stuff we've been trying to tackle a little bit at Portland State. Is really, you know, as these molecules are emitted into the atmosphere, it turns out some of them actually may help to scrub other pollutants out of the atmosphere. So even though we think of these isoprene molecules going up and ultimately creating ozone, that's true. But because there is some evidence to suggest that these isoprene molecules may actually help clean the atmosphere as well by kind of reacting with the ozone and kind of inactivating it, so to speak.
It sounds like we hardly know about how all these reactions are occurring. It's like not been studied that much.
Well, what's fascinating to me as a biologist is we probably understand more about the what plants produce in the volatile landscape and the negative aspects of plants on atmospheric chemistry than we necessarily know the positive. And so it's amazing. And part of it's the challenge. It's really difficult to understand, for example, how pollutants are moving into trees. But people are making progress on this. And I think this, to me, is kind of the holy grail. Because if we could start to understand the biology of the tree landscape, right, in the urban landscape, we get closer to trying to figure out how to create these, what I like to call sustainable urban atmospheres, right? Because ultimately, you want to put the built environment together with the biotic environment and really try to design, right, a city where you have breathable air. And plants are dead center, right, into that equation. Yet, you know, we spend a lot of time engineering our cities in stormwater and in water supply and buildings. I think we can invest a little more time into really engineering, you know, our landscapes within our cities
and you
for
need,
certain functions.
Yeah, and you need to understand the biodiversity that you want to have there, right? You don't
absolutely.
Want the monoculture.
Absolutely, because then what happens, we're seeing it around the country where, you know, we have this boom and bust cycle of urban trees. We can think of what happened, you know, to the elms in terms of Dutch elm disease. And then as soon as the Dutch elm disease wipes out urban trees, we plant ashes. And now we're suffering from emerald ash borer, which is killing millions of trees, right, in the East and the Midwest. So we really need to think about the whole package deal, right, of the urban canopy. So what are the multiple ecosystem services, not only from, you know, energy consumption, shading and cooling, habitat, but also this air quality, both the positive and the negative. I think it's a real exciting future.
This is Science Friday from PRI, Public Radio International. I'm Ira Flatow talking with Todd Rosensteel, professor of biology at Portland State University. Now, and I understand that you've actually engineered some trees to emit less of these volatile chemicals.
Yeah, I mean, this is, it may seem like plants can't possibly produce enough of these volatiles to make an impact globally, but it's not true. In fact, trees around the globe emit at least 10 times more VOCs into the atmosphere than humans do, for example. And the places where that starts to play out is particularly in the area of things like bioenergy. When we want to start putting whole new cropping systems onto the landscape, sometimes we don't think enough about what might it mean to put 1,000 or 10,000 or 100,000 acres of a plant which, say, produces a lot of isoprene. So one thing we've been trying to do is actually sort of design what I'm calling the next generation of clean bioenergy crops which, using genetic techniques, we've silenced the production of these VOCs in order to basically give us a cleaner option to kind of go forward with kind of the green economy.
So you've sliced out this isoprene gene from the plant so it doesn't make, the tree doesn't make it. Is there, though, the possible law of the unexpected consequence that
Great question. I mean, and this is always the thing we have to think about. But I think one of the things we've been doing really intentionally is to figure out, you know, we're kind of in a global transformation at the landscape level for plants on this planet, where, you know, literally from one year to the next, we can switch cropping systems, hundreds of thousands of acres. And we're choosing new crops that we need to think about how to not cause more negative consequences to the environment. And so one of the things we've been doing is trying to find a variety of sort of molecular techniques where we can silence this production. And then you have to do what is necessary, which is you have to you have to make enough of them and do the tests. And we have ongoing field trials in Oregon to try to understand how do these trees perform to kind of get ahead of the curve. And it's an interesting little intersection where there's such a drive towards a bioeconomy. But in some places, you know, we don't want to be planting 50 or 100,000 acres of isoprene or terpene-emitting bioenergy crop because of its effect on air quality.
Now, you actually had a study that looked at urban trees and the cost to healthcare. And tell us what you found.
Yeah, so one thing we've been working a lot is really trying to put back into the equation, you know, the role of urban forests, both in the green infrastructure, but also the role that natural systems and urban forests play in, you know, healthcare and healthcare management. And one of the things we've been working with a group study funded by the U.S. Forest Service in Portland was to help understand, you know, what role does Portland's canopy play in reducing human exposure to pollutants. And we've done some really, I'd say, high-resolution monitoring mapping to really try to put a dollar value. And, you know, just in the study that we just published, basically are suggesting that the Portland canopy as is, and this is probably the really minimum number, we're suggesting we save at least $7 million a year in healthcare costs. Because of respiratory and cardiovascular stuff. Now that has been scaled up nationally by other colleagues, that Dave Nowak at the U.S. Forest Service, who's really suggested at a national scale, he estimates somewhere around $7 billion a year may be attributed to healthcare cost benefits and savings by the nation's forests, both urban and natural systems.
So this is
so
really
the
something.
The potential is
to,
huge.
Yeah, so something to be taken very seriously when you're an urban planner. Then.
Oh, absolutely. And to me, the future is, I mean, we are, you know, a nation and a world that's increasingly living in urban landscapes. And if we're trying to push towards really sustainable urban landscapes, we have to put the biology back in the equation, positive and negative. And I think there's huge upsides to thinking about the healthcare benefits, right, of greening cities.
I got about 20 seconds. Should you be thinking of these things when you're planting your own trees in your own backyard?
Absolutely. I mean, I think there's lots of resources online that can help people decide to do that. In general, though, I think it's more something that large cities, when you're doing major tree planting campaigns, should really think about, particularly as you're getting closer and closer to choosing where to plant a tree. And we're trying to develop some applications at Portland State that would help us understand where you should be planting a tree to get what particular outcome.
Dr. Rosenstiel, thank you for taking time to be with us today. Fascinating.
My pleasure.
Dr. Todd Rosenstiel is professor of biology at Portland State University.